This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to Market Talk. In today's episode, we'll cover frictions between President Trump and the Fed, the path of the US dollar, and whether earnings season expectations are out of step with reality. My name is Harry. I'm a content manager in L&G's asset management business based in London. And today I'm joined by Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy Asia, who joins us from Hong Kong. Given the pace of recent market developments, I feel like I should start by making it clear that we're recording this episode on the Wednesday. So here's hoping events don't overtake us by the time this is published on Thursday. How do you rate our chances, Ben?
Yeah, well, I think we're both traumatized from our experience a fortnight ago from recording this and going through all the market moves and then President Trump announcing that he wasn't going to be putting in place the reciprocal tariffs for a while. And then we had to scrap it, didn't we? So everyone has missed our brilliant podcast from a couple of weeks ago. But obviously, this one's going to be much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get straight into it. Jay Powell, the head of the US Federal Reserve, faced renewed criticism earlier this week from Donald Trump for not cutting interest rates as fast as he'd like. The president has since said that he's got no intention of firing Powell, which sent stocks, bonds and the dollar higher after a sell-off earlier in the week. What have we learned from this episode?
Yeah, so you're right. There was criticism a couple of days ago. I think the quote was Powell's termination cannot come fast enough. And then, as you say, President Trump has clarified that, saying no intention of firing Powell. Interestingly, the President Trump was the person who appointed Jerome Powell as the chair of the Federal Reserve he started in 2018. Trump nominated him in 2017. Now, Powell has got a sort of mixed reputation, has he? He has, to be fair, been in some rather sticky situations, let's say COVID and the incredible fiscal loosening that took place during that time, pumping up inflation. Powell, along with many people, I guess, misdiagnosed that inflation as transitory, if you remember at the time, and then subsequently had to hike interest rates aggressively to try and get that under control. He's since used the word transitory again for the potential impact of inflation, the more recent potential increase in inflation. So, you know, he's managed to get things under control. He's done a reasonably good job. Obviously, markets are strong. When it was under some question about whether or not Trump supported Powell, you said before that equity markets fell a lot. And then on the support for Powell, equity markets rallied. So I guess that suggests that investors on the whole quite like Jerome Powell. But I think it's more than that. I think it's actually the independence of the central bank that is the key here, whether or not Trump and other politicians have the ability to set monetary policy or whether or not it's an independent central bank. And that's, I think, because independent central banks have got a pretty good record of keeping inflation under control, apart from a couple of hiccups that I was just describing earlier. But generally, since independent central banks came along, inflation's been kept under control. Investors like that. I think there is some concern that if politicians were to be able to control interest rates, that perhaps they would be set at levels that weren't the correct level. Let's just say that. And that inflation perhaps would be, over the longer period of time, not kept quite as much under control. So generally, I think it's that investors like independent central banks. But that's where we are right now. And as President Trump said, that's what he wants for the time being.
Something else we've seen this week is the US dollar index hitting a three-year low earlier in the week. I think it's bounced back somewhat after the president's latest comments. But it's notable that we've seen periods recently in which US equities, bonds and the dollar have all fallen together. I think that's not normally the case. Typically, the dollar has strengthened in periods of equity and bond weakness as a perceived safe haven. So what does these periods of simultaneous decline tell us about what's going on in markets at the moment?
Yeah, that's right. Normally, when there's risk off, the investors will flee to safe havens. As you say before, that's usually the dollar and it's usually government bonds. This time around, it's been something different. So yeah, the dollar has been weaker and government bond yields have also been climbing too. So let's take the, for the dollar, let's take the DXY index, the DXY, which is a sort of versus some other developed market in currencies. So that has fallen by about 9%. In the course of 2025, up until the 22nd of April, as you said, we're recording this on Wednesday. So that's Tuesday's close. So down about 9%. That's quite a big move over the course of just a few months. 10-year yields, since I'm taking this since the end of March, so since just before Liberation Day, they're now up at 4.4%, 10-year yields in the US, from 4.2%. So again, that's gone up during this period where there's been quite a lot of volatility, and that's not normally the case. And that hasn't been a great backdrop for investors, like I said, who's tried to hide in safe havens. These have not been the safe havens. So what's happened? What is the new safe haven? Well, it feels as though over this last few weeks that there's been a bit of a almost a backlash against U.S. assets, that the U.S. is not seen anymore as a safe haven. Again, I'd say that's exaggerated. I think the U.S. dollar, there aren't many there isn't any alternative to the U.S. dollar as the global currency, the safe haven, the currency of choice for all central banks. There really isn't another alternative. So that's still, I think, going to be holding that safe haven status going forward. But I think maybe earlier this year, maybe towards the end of last year, there was a bit of a peak of perception that of US exceptionalism, that the US would outperform everything, that people wanted to invest in the Magnificent Seven, whatever it might be. And perhaps this concern about US policy, uncertainty about US policy has undermined that to a degree. But because it was so overowned, because sentiment was so positive about the US, perhaps that switch in momentum has exaggerated some of the moves that we've seen. So yeah, fair enough. It hasn't quite worked out as we normally see, but I wouldn't say this is the end of the US assets as being the safe haven. The one place that has been the safe haven has been gold. I think we've spoken about that a lot. And that has been the case all year. Gold up 30% so far this year. But is gold an alternative currency to the US dollar? No. I mean, we can't go around transacting. We've moved on from that, haven't we, Harry? We are now using credit cards. We're using Apple Pay. We're not using bits of gold. So no, I don't think so.
So since the start of the year, most economists have revised down their growth estimates for 2025 based on trade tensions. The IMF, I think, now expects the US to be the hardest hit among advanced economies by the uncertainty that's being caused by tariff moves. We've had a slew of granular economic data in recent days. Has any of this given us some clarity around whether those downward revisions are showing up in the data?
No, they haven't. And I think that's, to be fair, that's to be expected for now. So, I mean, we had just recently some US retail sales data, which were still fine, declining a little bit, but still fine. We're going to get industrial production data as well. Again, it's all looking okay. And like I said, that's to be expected because, if anything, you might see some spike in actual hard data in April as people try to get ahead of the tariffs, both from a trade perspective, from a manufacturing perspective, from a consumption perspective. I think we've all seen stories, haven't we, of customers trying to buy electronic goods before the prices go up and inventories running down. That you could actually see a bit of a bump in hard data, and that could be for April, and we'll only receive that in May. Maybe if we are to see an economic slowdown, that would be more May data, which we will get in June. So, you know, it could be a little while before we actually see the hard data. What we have seen, though, is sentiment indicators falling. So today's, we've just got, just before we've started chatting, we've seen some European PMIs, which were generally weaker than expected, but not falling off a cliff. So these are sentiment indicators from purchasing managers in Europe for this is for Germany, France, and the UK. They're below 50, which is the sort of average number. They are in the 40s, but they're not in a recession. You'd expect it to be going into the 30s, that type of level. We're not at those levels. But one to keep an eye on. I think those sentiment indicators will probably show the way forward, and maybe we'll start to pick up those in the next couple of weeks if we are to see a proper weakening in global growth.
Interesting. I wonder if this idea of hard and soft data might be relevant for the next question on my list, which is earnings season, which of course is getting into full swing now with the big banks, and then the first of the big tech giants have now started reporting. My feeling is that there's a bit of a mismatch between those high-level growth forecasts that I mentioned a minute ago, which are becoming more pessimistic, and the bottom-up estimates of S&P growth for the year, which remain in double digits, I believe, fairly optimistic. It feels like there's maybe a gap between those two. And if there is a gap, which sectors might we expect to fall into it?
Yeah, if we were to see a recession, which is obviously the worst case outcome from all this, then earnings in 2025 will be, certainly by the end of 2025, will be pretty weak. As you say, the expectation is currently for earnings growth of about 10% in the S&P 500 in 2025, which is, that would be totally fine. But it's still early. I mean, to sort of peek behind the curtain here about how this sort of stuff works is that during the earnings, just before the earnings season, analysts tend to revise down their expectations because companies are trying to manage the expectations. And then lo and behold, when they come out with their earnings results, they generally beat these downwardly revised analyst expectations. It's a bit of a silly dance that goes on every quarter. So I would expect that 10% for 2025 to be revised down, and then assuming we don't get a recession, that actually it gets beaten those downward revisions, and we probably end up with 10% again if nothing goes wrong. For this Q1 earnings season, the expectation versus Q1 last year is for a 4% increase, which is a bit less than that 10, isn't it? So that's again, it's nothing to really worry about. And as I said before, it will generally, those earnings will beat expectations. So it'll probably come in at about 7% growth. Again, totally fine. But it all depends. It'll all depends on whether or not we get a proper economic downturn or not. And that will then go into these numbers. The analysts will have to revise down, if that's the case, these expectations. We might start to see already some qualitative assessments from companies about what the impact has been so far. It's probably still a bit too early. Even companies don't really know what the impact will be on them. But you'll see a lot of questions about that. So that'll be interesting. And in terms of which sectors, I think it's just going to be the usual. If this is a down cycle for the economy, then you're going to see cyclical sectors getting impacted much more. And the companies that will do better will be the non-cyclical, the healthcare, the utility sector, all that sort of stuff. So I would expect it to go as per normal.
So we focused quite a lot, understandably, I suppose, on the US so far today, but I'm interested to hear about how the rest of the world is faring as well. I've read quite a bit of commentary in recent weeks suggesting that the stage may have been set for a European renaissance of sorts. What would we need to see for that to materialise for Europe to really start motoring ahead?
Yeah, I think the US exceptionalism that I was saying before, the flip side of that is that Europe, the fact that the US might be losing exception, maybe it's now the turn of Europe to do better. What I said earlier, I think, just stands correct as well. I think the death of the US exceptionalism is probably exaggerated, and therefore perhaps the growth of Europe is a little bit premature as well. I mean, the let's take the euro as an example here. So the euro, because the dollar has been weaker, the euro has appreciated over the course of this year about 10%. Now, the European exporters, already being impacted potentially by tariffs, are now facing the fact that their currency is stronger. So everything that they sell feels more expensive to other countries that are trying to buy their goods. On the flip side, everything that the Europe is importing now seems cheaper. So as a European consumer, you could imagine that perhaps they want to start to move away from stuff that's been manufactured locally and start buying global stuff. That could weigh on the European manufacturing sector. We know there's still huge manufacturing sector, particularly in Germany. So that is definitely a headwind going forward. Also, don't forget about European politics. So I've read reports that in France they're talking about potentially another election at the end of the summer. That hasn't been announced formally yet, but we know that's possible. And we all know that the situation, the political situation in France, alongside lots of other countries, is difficult. So that could again sort of shine a light on some of the fragilities that we know exist there. And the European stock market has outperformed so far this year. So it's not as if it has the same degree of cheapness that we saw at the beginning of the year. So the Euro stocks is up over 1% versus the S&P 500 down 10%. So that's been an 11% shift. So, you know, like I said, I would be a little bit wary about declaring the end of the US and the beginning of a period where the European stocks and assets will outperform. Yeah, I'm a bit skeptical about that.
We've reached that point of the podcast once again. Ben, what's your number of the week?
Yeah, I was going to talk about, because we haven't covered anything in Asia, so I'm going to say 2.7% is my number of the week. And that is the yield of the 30-year Japanese government bond. And that, I mean, it doesn't sound a huge amount, does it, 2.7%? But it is for Japan. It really has, we've seen yields increase for quite a long period of time now in Japan as they're getting out of their lost multiple decades. Inflation is starting to go up. That 30-year Japanese government bond yield was below 1% for 6 years between 2016 and 2022, so not that long ago. So if you're a local investor, you were forced a little bit over that period of time when yields were so low to look elsewhere to buy bonds in, yeah, maybe US bonds, European bonds. But at 2.7%, you know, you could probably stick locally, couldn't you? A little bit like the reverse of what I was saying for Europe just a second ago. Maybe Japanese investors can stay local. Maybe that loosens some of the shackles that were being put on yields elsewhere, because we know that there was a lot of buying out of Japan, supporting US bond markets, European bond markets, keeping their yields lower than perhaps they would otherwise be, because they were just being bought by these Japanese investors desperate for yield. And maybe that's some of the reason why we're seeing upward pressure everywhere in yields. I mentioned before, US yields going up unusually during this period of time. And I guess part of that is because we haven't got this wave of demand from the rest of the world, perhaps from Japan coming in and supporting US yields. So really just interesting to see how it's all interlinked, how yields in Japan going up, that could, like I said, just lead a little bit higher momentum globally for yields.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, Ben. Lovely to catch up, as always. And thank you to all our listeners, too.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic, or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2017. 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities, undertaking for collective investment in transferable securities regulations 2011 as amended, and as an alternative investment fund manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.